To call the Subcommittee on Ethical Conduct to order today, March 23rd, 2012. We're here today to discuss a complaint filed by Senator Sandy Pappas on March 2012. My office has provided information to both parties and the members that complaint and any additional memos from Senate Counsel that were available, and we have agreed to proceed at this time with a probable cause hearing. Basically today, and I think that most of the members and the parties were made aware of it, we're going to have a presentation by the complainant, Senator Pappas, and then we will be allowed to ask questions from the subcommittee, and Senator Michelle and Council would have the opportunity to ask questions of Senator Pappas. Then we will have a presentation from Senator Michelle where the subcommittee and Senator Pappas would have the opportunity to ask questions. We will then have any rebuttal from Senator Pappas, any rebuttal from Senator Michelle, and then deliberation by the subcommittee. I would like to make just a brief statement regarding some opening remarks and the procedures and the concern for today. As you are aware, our charge today is to hold a probable cause hearing regarding the ethical conduct complaint filed by Senator Pappas against Senator Michelle. The requirement for this hearing is found in Senate Rule 55.4. I believe those rules are available, but I will quote the rule. Within 30 days after receiving a complaint, the subcommittee must meet and either make a finding of no probable cause, vote to defer action until a certain time, or proceed with its investigation. This hearing is limited to an examination of the written complaint submitted by Senator Pappas, which I believe everybody has had an opportunity to take a look at. The questions for the subcommittee include today: what are the facts as opposed to opinions stated in the complaint? And number two, for the purposes of this hearing, if the facts are presumed to be true, is there a claim of conduct that violated Senate rules? We are not here today to conduct a trial. I do not intend to allow witnesses to testify. They are not necessary for the purposes of the probable cause hearing today. We must consider carefully the statements offered by Senator Pappas and Senator Michelle with respect to whether the complaint shows probable cause. We are not here today to speculate about conduct that may or may not have occurred. Our work requires that we examine the complaint to determine whether it supports a finding of probable cause. If we determine that that complaint supports probable cause, further proceedings may be necessary at that time. Today's hearing is not the purpose of the investigation is not the purpose of today's hearing. There is another matter of significance to the Senate that will affect our work today. As you are aware, the Senate as an institution and certain individuals are potential defendants in litigation. The allegations and claims made against the Senate are described in a document filed by a former Senate employee's attorneys, styled as a notice of claim. The document was served on the Attorney General, Minnesota Attorney General, and I've consulted with Senate counsel regarding this matter. The proceedings here today and any future proceedings must be conducted so that potential litigation proceeds in an orderly manner. I don't think it is in the best interest of the Senate to conduct an ethical conduct proceeding that may affect the ability of the Senate to defend itself in legal proceedings. If there are any questions or testimony that will affect that interest, I will address that concern and seek guidance from counsel as appropriate. I wanted to make sure that that was clear given the unusual circumstances. Are there any questions from the committee? Senator Sharon.
I tried to listen to the comprehensively to what you were saying, and you were referencing at some point that you will not allow witnesses to testify?
No, Senator Sharon, we haven't in the past at the probable cause hearing. If you will remember the two that I presided over, we did not have that. It's about probable cause and not about the investigation at this point.
It's hard for me to anticipate what kind of information or what is going to happen as people present the complaint. But if it's necessary to ask for information from someone other than the complainant, or information to help us determine probable cause, then someone would be allowed to testify or give information, as long as it's not that it's specific to what the complaint is about here and not something that goes beyond that.
We're examining the complaint, the written document that we were provided with by Senator Pappas at this point to determine if there's probable cause. We have not had witnesses. I mean, as you recall, at the Senator Hoffman, Senator Goodwin did not testify. So I guess I don't at this point see any situation where we would need to have witnesses. Our charges regarding the complaint as written.
Thank you, Senator Fischbach. And I may not see the necessity at all to have someone be a witness, but I could see if there's a disagreement about the facts that there may be a need to either confirm or not confirm facts by independent testimony. That's what I'm concerned about.
For the purposes of the probable cause hearing, we assume that the facts in the complaint are true.
Okay. Thank you.
So there won't be that. At this point, I do need to swear in the witnesses. If the witnesses, those, Senator Pappas, Senator Michelle, please stand up. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear that the evidence you shall give relative to the cause now under consideration shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Then we are ready to begin with the presentation from Senator Pappas.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Chair Fischbach and members of the subcommittee, thank you for your prompt attention to this serious matter and the opportunity for me to testify regarding the recent complaint I submitted pertaining to our colleague, Senator Jeff Michelle. It's my sincere hope that a fair and comprehensive hearing on the facts of this case will bring about a quick resolution to this issue. To begin with, it's important to point out that Senate DFL Leader Tom Bach had repeatedly encouraged current Majority Leader David Senjum to restore the public's trust in our institution due to events surrounding the resignation of Senator Koch as a leader of the Senate. No resolution has occurred from these attempts, and since the legislative session is tentatively scheduled to adjourn in just over a month, this avenue is the sole means to address the matter. I intend to verify that Senator Michelle violated Senate Permanent Rule 56 by providing multiple misleading and false public statements when he became aware of an inappropriate relationship between former Senate Majority Leader and a subordinate staff member. Senate Permanent Rule 56.1 states, "Members shall adhere to the highest standard of ethical conduct as embodied in the Minnesota Constitution, state law, and these rules." Subsequently, 56.3 states, "Improper conduct includes conduct that violates a rule or administrative policy of the Senate, that violates accepted norms of Senate behavior, that betrays the public trust, or that tends to bring the Senate into dishonor or disrepute." On December 16th of 2011, Senator Michelle held a press conference with Senator Senjum, Gerlach, and Han to provide a public explanation for why Senator Koch had resigned her post as Majority Leader the day prior on December 15th. Three of these senators, with the exception of Senator Senjum, along with Senator Roebling, in their own admission, confronted Senator Koch regarding an inappropriate relationship between her and a Senate staff member. This meeting took place on Wednesday, December 14th. In the December 16th press conference, Senator Michelle repeatedly stated that his knowledge of this inappropriate relationship occurred weeks ago. Senator Michelle states, "I've said weeks. That's certainly true from my personal knowledge," and answers affirmatively when questioned if he learned about the affair about 2 weeks ago. He further suggests he confronted Senator Koch with all deliberate speed to resolve the alleged inappropriate relationship. These statements were contradicted in a public interview just 5 days later. Former Chief of Staff Colin Sheehan stated in this interview, 3 months ago, I became aware of a potential relationship between Senator Koch and a staffer. Sheehan first learned of this relationship on September 21st and confirmed it with Senator Koch and the staffer. He also stated that he met with Deputy Majority Leader Jeff Michel the next day on September 22nd. Senator Michel confirmed this timeline in the same publication and the fact that it contradicted his public statements from December 16th. Michel stated, "I felt at that time if I said 2 months or whatever the exact number is, that that would have very obviously pointed out who the whistleblower was." Senator Michel, first, is on record providing misleading and false statements on the pretense of protecting whistleblowers. However, he was under no compulsion to provide any information regarding a timeline of his knowledge of the relationship. But instead, Senator Michel decided to provide inaccurate information to the public. Further, Senator Michel indicated there were multiple whistleblowers, and since corroborating Mr. Sheehan's story on December 21st, no additional whistleblowers have been publicly disclosed, nor should they be, as Mr. Sheehan came forward of his own volition. The dissemination of misleading and false statements is not ethically justified due to the existence of whistleblowers, and no exception to this matter is provided in Senate rules. Anonymousness is maintained by providing no information that might compromise whistleblowers, not inaccurate information as Senator Michel supplied to the public. Secondly, as Assistant Majority Leader, Senator Michel had an obligation as a leader of the Senate to swiftly address the inappropriate relationship to maintain a safe working environment for Senate staff. He stated himself, "That kind of relationship is inappropriate, it raises a conflict of interest, and it creates what we've talked about as an unstable, unsustainable work environment for our staff," end quote. Since Senator Koch was implicated in the relationship, it was the responsibility of Senator Michel to ensure the situation was resolved in a timely manner. And while Senator Michel has stated that he spoke to Senate Human Resources, it remains unclear who he spoke to in the Secretary of Senate's office and whether he followed up with the office in the ensuing 11 weeks before public disclosure, and why the unstable workplace environment was not resolved with all deliberate speed. The false and misleading statements provided by Senator Michel constitute a breach of the public's trust and are unbecoming of a Minnesota senator. They tarnish the reputation of the body and bring into question its credibility, as well as the individual senator's trustworthiness. It is improper conduct that violates the Senate's accepted norms of behavior and thus violates Senate Permanent Rule 56. In addition, Senator Republican Caucus spokesperson Steve Swigum publicly stated the handling of the alleged affair between the months of September and December was a cover-up. If this is the case, it's the responsibility of the subcommittee to find the truth. Finally, I request that this subcommittee, after confirming these facts and the violation of Senate rules, require Senator Michel to fully address the circumstances surrounding his statements and compel Senator Michel to publicly apologize on the Senate floor for his actions. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you very much, Senator Pappas. Are there questions from the subcommittee?
Madam Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen. Whichever one you'd like.
Everybody sounds better coming through this one. Is there going to be a chance to question Senator Pappas after, I'm assuming Senator Michel is now going to give testimony? Are we going to be able to pull witnesses back and forth?
Yes, we certainly can accommodate that.
Questions till after that.
Well, then we do have on... on the order of business today, if Senator Michel would like to ask any questions. No? Then Senator Michel, thank you, Senator Pappas, and Senator Michel will make his presentation if you would leave the witness table and have Senator Michel join us there. Thank you.
Madam Chair, where would you like me to sit, whenever
the table? You know, if you want to take a place over there, since there's, it's kind of packed in here. Senator Michelle, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I do appreciate the subcommittee's expedited calendar and action on this. I'm not sure there's a busier time in the whole 2011 legislative session, and I know there's 27 other places you could all be, so I appreciate you being here today. I also wanted to remark that you know, I get up, you know, once in a while on the Senate floor and a little bit in committee, but it's nice to think that some people will be listening today as opposed to some of those other times. Madam Chair, I guess I will start my statement with a phrase. This is Monday morning quarterbacking. I think the challenge before the committee today is to distinguish between ethics and just partisan politics. Partisan politics don't belong in front of you. They don't belong in this room. They don't belong in front of the Ethics Committee. But here we are. So, this assignment fell to me in my role as Deputy Majority Leader. No one would have asked for or volunteered for this assignment, but that's what comes with being in the majority. That's what comes with trying to help run this institution. So over time, a group of members and a group of staff advanced a very sensitive issue in a thoughtful and thorough manner. We did our homework on the facts and on the law, on the human resources pieces of this. We wanted to do what was right, and we wanted to do it in a transparent fashion and not be part of any cover-up, period. This was a situation that had no playbook and no noticeable precedent. My first concern when I learned of this situation was to look out for the interests of our staff, of our employees in the Minnesota Senate. All of us, whether we're in leadership or not, all of us have an obligation to work to create a respectful work environment in what is often a difficult place to work. It was also my job to protect a group of employees who, in an effort to correct a problem in our work environment, came forward. It was hard for them to come forward. It was courageous of them to come forward. So we legislators do not always make it easy on staff. The least we can do is to address their concerns and be a safe place for them. I also had a duty to the Senate, again, as we all do, a duty to the institution. If a conflict of interest existed, if an inappropriate relationship existed, it needed to be resolved, even if it concerned a close friend and a trusted ally. This institution has been given the public's trust, and it must operate in a way that preserves that trust. So in taking this approach, I knew that I would be open for criticism, that those who worked with me would be open for criticism, no matter what we did or how we approached this. There would be members of the minority who criticized us. We took that as a given. I've been in the minority before. Most of my days here, I've been in the minority. And I know that we can't help ourselves when there's a good majority caucus scandal. But I also know that the actions that I took were done for only one reason. And that was because I was the Deputy Majority Leader and employees of the Senate had come forward. They'd come forward about the workplace. They'd come forward about a conflict of interest. And this was a relationship between the Senate Majority Leader and a direct report. And as deputy, I had to act on that. and to act on the subsequent complaints and employees that came forward. So turning to the actual complaint before the committee today from Senator Pappas, there seems to be three general issues that I need to address. First, the issue of false or clearly misleading statements. What I did, members, was attempt to protect staff and to protect whistleblowers from being dragged further into this matter. They asked for that protection. They asked for that confidentiality. In response to questions from reporters, I tried very hard to avoid being specific about when staff came to me regarding the majority leader and her subordinate. I clearly was not expansive or precise about the timeline, but I didn't try to be false or misleading, and I don't think I was. If I could do one particular press event over again, if I could answer a question differently, what I should have said was, I'm not going to address the timeline question in any specific fashion in order to protect staff and whistleblowers. The ethical decision, the balance that I tried to weigh personally was to err on the side of protecting employees and protecting these staff. Rather than being any more specific or precise or exact about times or dates, because to do so would have put them in harm's way. My attempts to protect these whistleblowers did not bring the Senate into dishonor or disrepute. Indeed, we acted to protect the honor of the Senate, to protect the reputation of the Senate by protecting our employees. That's one of our obligations. That motivated our every action and our every response. Secondly, that this was some cover-up. Members, I began taking action the moment this situation was reported to me, the day this situation was reported to me. I conferred with Senate Human Resources staff. I sought help on the legal issues. I sought help on the human resources issues surrounding employee conflicts of interest. And I sought help to determine if there was any precedent for influencing a legislative leader who refused to address a workplace complaint such as this. So again, I went to legal counsel. I went to human resources counsel. I appreciate that Senator Pappas and it sounds like Senator Bach believe they would have handled this differently. I'm not sure I can argue with them on that. Maybe they would have. I hope you never have to face that. But there were multiple parties here with multiple conflicting rights. There was a lot to balance, and there was no playbook. There was no playbook. So if others believe they could have addressed this better, I tip my hat to them. Meanwhile, the comment about a cover-up is political nonsense. It's about headlines, not the facts. We were cleaning this up, not covering it up. It was Senate leadership, Senate Republican leadership, who went to Senator Koch to confront her and make a second request and another request to her to address the situation. When she stepped down, it was Senate leadership who decided to tell the public the full story the next day. Rather than wait for it to come out in drips and drabs, because that's what was happening. This 21st century media, you guys act quickly. You guys act quickly. And so, again, we wanted to be open and transparent and explain what we had done. We did this knowing it would cause our caucus and our party great embarrassment. But we believed we had no other ethical choice. And with the exception of my attempt to protect the staff, including the employee who was accused of having the affair with Senator Koch, we were open and direct about the events. I invite you to tell me of a comparable situation where a previous leader, where a previous majority leader, the chair of the Rules Committee, dealt with an employment problem as open and directly as we did in December. It's easy to use the word cover-up. I get it. It makes for a great speech. But this was the most transparent cover-up in the history of politics. Why did this take so long? Why did this take so long? The majority leader was not willing to resolve the conflict, even after being confronted by our chief of staff. The employee in question did not step down. As additional employees came to us, they presented new facts for us to deal with. There's no clear ethics position in the Senate files on an issue such as this. And within all this, the majority leader, the employee in question, and the whistleblowers all had some level of legitimate legal protections. And we had to be mindful of that. We had to balance all that. There were also marriages and families and children involved. So we could not cut corners. I'll also remind you, as proud as I am and was to be deputy majority leader, there's probably not as much power in that position as you might think. I hope a bunch of people behind me are smiling now. I had no specific power on my own to make this right. Until she resigned, Senator Koch was Senate Majority Leader and Chair of the Rules Committee. She was in charge, and she was elected to be in charge by the Senate. I was not Majority Leader, not in charge, and had no authority until she resigned. When subsequently she did cross that threshold with her resignation, we did take action, and we took swift action. Prior to that, I didn't have the authority of the majority leader position, but I did have the obligation and the goal to protect our employees and to protect this institution. The only way that I could act was in concert with others. It was to get the advice of smart people, legal and HR professionals, and then to work with other members of the Senate and to work with the Secretary of the Senate's office. And we did each of those things. Believe me, knowing what I know now, what we have all been through, I would love for this to have gone faster. No one in the Minnesota State Senate would wish for this to have gone faster than me. But speed should not be our guide when dealing with complicated employment law and ethical issues. We needed to resolve the conflict, and in this case, we did. The conflict was resolved, employees were protected, and the workplace was improved by the actions we took. I do want to give an apology today, and that's to our staff, both partisan and nonpartisan. I am truly sorry for all that our staff have been through, and anything that I may have done to make that worse. This has been a difficult place to work over the last several months. And I also want to give at this point some public thanks. Some public thanks to people who walked down this road with me. The Secretary of the Senate, employees of his office. And I want to do this carefully, but I also want to acknowledge some members that walked down this road with me, Senator Gerlach, Senator Roebling, Senator Hahn, Senator Senjum. None of them ran for office to walk down this kind of road. And members, we do need a playbook. We do need a playbook. That could be a project for this committee, for the Ethics Committee of the State Senate. I have I've spoken to both Senators Senjum and Bach about this. Maybe that's a project that you'll be given or that you'll be asked to take on. What is a conflict of interest? What is an inappropriate relationship? What are the lines between a supervisor and an employee? Where should an employee go? Where should a member go to talk about and get advice about these kind of issues? So I hope that's a discussion we can continue moving forward. As for this complaint, I think we all know this is just part of the game of politics. Senator Coke's not available as a target anymore. Senator Coke's apologized, and she has accepted full responsibility. That was an honorable thing for her to do. So now Senator Pappas has turned on me. After all, there's no point in allowing a scandal to get wrapped up in January if you can keep it going into March, especially during an election year. But fortunately, I sit here with the hope that you members know the difference between a matter of ethics and a matter of politics. So members of the committee, I ask for dismissal of this complaint. Let's go back upstairs and get to work on the things that Minnesotans want us to be working on, jobs, the economy. We still got a little work to do over the next several weeks. And Minnesotans are demanding that we work on it together, not convene the Ethics Committee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Michelle. Are there questions from the committee for Senator Michelle? Are there questions from Senator?
There'll be other opportunities for questions.
They'll stay, so yeah, we can. Are there questions from Senator Pappas for Senator Michelle?
Thank you, Senator Pappas. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your statement, Senator Michelle. It was very, very helpful. And I think it's unfair to characterize my complaint as political, because by the words of your own caucus, it wasn't me that said there was a cover up. It was Mr. Swigum. You know, it wasn't me that created a 3-month delay before it appeared any action was taken. It was you and your colleagues. And then to have a dramatic press conference where misleading information was given about when you knew what when, and we have no idea if any action was taken.
Senator Pappas?
Oh, I'm not supposed to make a statement.
Is it a question?
To ask questions. I apologize. I just was very taken by what you were saying. I apologize.
You will have that opportunity, but right now it is questions.
So my question is, even though you said there's no playbook, I think that if you consult with professionals, and we supposedly have professionals working for us in the Human Relations Department, there should have been advice given you as to how to proceed. I know in the past I've had conflicts with staff, and I've gone to HR, and we've walked through what are the procedures that we need to do. So I guess I'm asking you, who did you go to, when did you go to the professionals, and what advice did they give you?
Excuse me, before you answer that, that may be moving into potential litigation, so I am going to respectfully request that you withdraw that question. I've been advised by counsel that this enters into an area related to potential litigation directly affecting the Senate's interest.
Madam Chair.
Senator Michelle.
I don't want to make you nervous, Madam Chair, but I can refer to some of the things I've already said in my statement in some kind of response. I promise to be careful, Madam Chair, but
Senator Michelle,
listening to Senator Pappas' statement and question, I think part of my answer is yes. That is exactly what we did. We went to HR professionals. We went to legal professionals. We went to the Secretary of the Senate's office. That's what we did. That's what I have said. That's what we have said. I would agree that in an updated playbook, those would be on the checklist. Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to speak.
And we are trying to be particularly careful in this
Madam
situation.
Madam Chair, does Senator Ingebrigtsen have a question?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Just to reiterate, that was part of Senator Michelle's statement as to when he actually did report this very clearly. It was immediately, so that was already covered, and I would answer her question.
Well, I understand that.
Senator Pappas. Madam Chair, because by statements that Senator Michelle made to the press, he was not always very precise about, you know, from a couple weeks ago to 2 weeks ago to the reality was 3 months ago. That's why I'm asking him to, if he could be a little more specific. And I'm not quite sure how this enters into the lawsuit situation by, you know, telling us who you talk to and when you talk to somebody. Because I understand you were out there on your own and you needed some help. You need some advice.
Madam Chair, I had some great help and advice.
But, Madam Chair.
Actually, Senator Pappas, I believe you had, Senator Harrington had a question.
Yes. Madam Chair, this is a question for Senator Michelle. You said there is no playbook, and I know that the Minnesota Senate has employment policies and procedures that are documented, and I'm wondering if that isn't a playbook in some fashion, and did you refer to it?
Madam Chair, Senator Harrington.
Senator Michelle.
Yes. I think that's a piece of what could be used and referred to. Perhaps what I'd want to stress to you, Senator Harrington, and to the members is that there are some general guidelines which are helpful. But again, this was an unprecedented situation involving the top of the pyramid, the head of the Minnesota State Senate.
And Senator Harrington, I'd just like to point out that the specific policies and procedures have not been made an issue in the complaint. They didn't refer. The issue was swiftly and definitively.
Chair.
I can't remember exactly, but the policies of the Senate and that employee handbook was not made an issue in the complaint.
To that point, and while
Harrington,
Madam Chair, while I see that while it was not listed in the complaint, Senator Michelle repeatedly referred to the lack of a playbook or the lack of any institutional guidance as to how he should proceed. And so to me, that is in conflict with the fact that we do have rules and regulations that would guide a manager and a leader in an organization as to how they should proceed. And so there's a discrepancy there between what I'm hearing and what I know to exist.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, Senator Michelle, I guess I'm you said in your statement just now that you did regret providing misleading information. I believe that's what you said. You may not have used those exact words, but we have you quoted as saying it was over the course of the last several weeks, or you confirmed that you learned of the affair 2 weeks ago, which is not true. You learned of the affair several months, as you subsequently admitted.
Is there
so
statement?
Therefore, my question is, what is the problem with just saying, I was wrong, and I'm sorry. I gave wrong information. And the justification for giving wrong information, you even admitted you should not have given wrong information. You should have given no information. So I think we have to be – anyway, that's my question, is why not just say, I gave wrong information, I'm sorry. That's all I'm looking for.
Senator Michelle.
Madam Chair, I know somewhere in Senator Papp's statements there's a question, and she's said a couple things. Senator Pappas and her complaint, you've cherry-picked a bunch of quotes over the course of 3 or 4 months and pulled them out of context and only used pieces of them. Now, I'm not sure the chair wants to get into each line and quote. I'm not sure that's the purpose of the probable cause determination, but you have alleged a cover-up, and yet you refer back to all the times we've been transparent. We've been so transparent, I have talked on the radio and on TV and to print media. I don't know how this can be a cover-up if you keep going back and finding all our quotes on it. Now, I would point out these. Most of these quotes are out of context. The Swigum quote is totally out of context, Senator Pappas. And if the committee's will is to go in those directions, we can do that. But I am convinced and will walk out of this room today feeling like a group of staff in a tough situation and a group of members in a tough situation did the right thing. Did the right thing by the Minnesota State Senate. Now, it wasn't easy, but we're not looking for medals. It was our responsibility.
And I just wanted to remind everybody that right now we are at a point where Senator Pappas does have an opportunity to ask questions. The committee can ask questions, but then we do have the opportunity for rebuttals. So just keeping that in mind, I think we strayed from it slightly, but if Senator Pappas has any specific questions, you do have an opportunity for a statement. So if you have questions, short, precise, that you'd like to ask, this would be the opportunity to do that. Senator Pappas, do you have any further questions? Oh, you
I'm
do?
I'm thinking
okay,
about
I'm
if
sorry.
I have a question.
I apologize.
I'm giving the opportunity if anyone else wants to ask a question.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. This is in relationship to Senator Pappas' question, which I get the battle back and forth, but the essential issues of the complaint are about misleading information and about speedy action. So to the question of Senator Pappas is about speedy action, Senator Michelle, if we cannot confirm, because we cannot make an inquiry as to who you communicated with and when you communicated with them following the first report to you, to affirm speedy action or appropriate action, since we cannot affirm that, we also cannot affirm the accuracy of what you're saying. So that's a problem for us in the sense that the timing between the actual report from
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon.
Senator Michelle.
I'm under oath, Senator Sharon. I am under oath. I'm asking you today to give me the benefit of the doubt. This is what I'm telling you in the committee.
And may I remind members and Senator Pappas and Senator Michelle, we are talking about the facts in the complaint here. We assume those facts are true. We are only looking at probable cause. We are not doing any kind of investigation at this point. And so I want to make sure we focus because of the delicate nature of. And so please, let's focus on the complaint. And that goes for the witnesses. And may I ask who's handing this out? But who is this?
That's not my request.
Okay, and Senator Pappas, we've got several other things that I guess you were handing out, you claimed to hand out.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
yes.
So you're confirming that these are your
yes,
things.
Yes, they came
from okay.
Senator,
can you name the documents, Senator Pappas, so that we understand where they're on the record?
I guess I see a new Senate aide, Steve Swigum, says he'll fight to keep his regent post too. And this is yours?
Yes, this is the Min Post article where Mr. Swigum says it was a cover-up on page 3.
And so on page 3, it's referenced in the complaint. Is that what you're saying?
Right.
And then you've got one titled Senator Michelle's Statement versus the Facts, and that's yours. You're claiming that. And
this is the transcript from December 16th. Is that what it says at the top?
It says Senator Michelle's Statements versus the Facts. This is the one I have. And if there's an intent to hand out more, I would. You generally,
and
we have that
beforehand,
and we hand those out. A little different than a regular committee. And then I've got another one that is stated. It starts Chair Fischbach and members of the subcommittee. And it appears
that's my opening statement.
Okay. Thank you. I just want to confirm on the record that those are.
They don't have that.
Your items.
Okay.
And there's more.
Madam Chair, this is coming. This is the transcript from the December 16th.
And this is it? Senator Pappas, because generally we have those things beforehand,
okay,
so we
I
can have them for
that.
All of the. So because it is, would have been a nice opportunity
kind
to read. Some of these are lengthy.
Up. Yeah,
some of these are lengthy, and it would have been nice to have to read beforehand.
Right.
Chair Fischbach, is the
yes,
panel?
Sir.
I should probably identify myself
yes,
since
please.
It's the first time I've spoken. My name is Bob Mayer. I'm a lawyer with Best and Flanagan, and I'm Jeff Michelle's lawyer today. Is the panel inclined to receive these extra exhibits that Senator Pappas is offering?
Well, and I, that's why I was asking. I'm a little concerned about it because it and how it relates to the complaint itself. And I'm trying to look at these on the as we're handed them.
Chair Fischbach, my client and I prepared for the complaint, and we're under the understanding that given that the facts in the complaint are deemed true for purposes of this hearing, that this wouldn't be a place where we have to deal with new evidence. So I'd leave that to the Chair Fischbach to decide whether or not this is in order to include in this record.
Okay, Madam Chair, it's just
Senator Pappas,
the documentation of where I got the information for my complaint. So
they are. So Senator Pappas, you're saying these are all related to.
There's nothing new here.
Okay. But if there is anything else that you would, if there's anything else you intend to hand out, I would please let us know.
Okay.
Is there any more?
Senator Pappas, is there any more?
Madam Chair, I did want to correct the impression again.
Senator Pappas?
That I called this.
Are there any more handouts?
No.
No. Thank you.
That I, Madam Chair, that
Senator Pappas.
I did not call this a cover-up. I wanted to pass out the article where Mr. Swigum called it a cover-up. And I think that that led me to wonder what was going on during those 2.5-3 months why I was concerned about that. But I do have a question, Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
Senator Michelle, to your knowledge, now that the current leaders are no longer here, are there any other whistleblowers? Have any been disclosed? Have any been come forward to other members of your caucus? Is there any reason that that we can't have them corroborate your explanation of the timeline?
Senator Pappas, that seems to stray beyond the complaint document.
Madam Chair, Senator Michelle states that the reason that he did not earlier is to protect whistleblowers.
But you even mentioned that whistleblowers should be protected, I believe. I'm concerned
right.
about going into that, shall we expose and
right.
bring
no,
out
we,
names?
No, we should not. It's just that so far we only know there was one who came forward voluntarily, and I was wondering if there had been any others who had come forward voluntarily.
I
I've got some questions over here, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, Senator Michelle.
I was watching you and Mr. Bodern.
Okay.
I've been clear, and I think the public record is clear, that there was multiple staff that came forward. I think maybe it's best to leave it at that. And again, Senator Papps, I can't believe you'd want to walk down this road. Why would we want to bring any staff any further into this? I don't.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, with regards to the document from the statement from Mr. Svigum, Mr. Svigum wasn't even employed. Was he employed at the time of this incident?
Senator Ingebrigtsen,
I don't believe he was on staff at the time, and I'm sitting here wondering if he isn't getting his comment is going to probably come from the comments that Senator Michelle testified about that are coming from the media, and he's getting his whatever comment he makes here from the news source, not being involved in any of this particular case. I see absolutely no reason why we should even accept this at all. And I don't know that he was suggested to be here by Senator Pappas. I can't answer that, but I'm just saying, well, we could ask for somebody else to bring a statement in here that happened to follow the media that wasn't employed at the state senate at the time, and they would have a matter of opinion. So I really see no reason to go there.
Madam Chair, can I respond?
Not at this time.
Okay.
Senator Harrington, you had a question.
2 points, Madam Chair. One in regards to the issue about whether there were multiple whistleblowers or not. Senator Michelle opened the door to that conversation when he said that there was a they. And part of what we are discussing here today is the veracity and the credibility of Senator Michelle in terms of his misspeaking or misstating or his giving information to the press that was not accurate. And so I think it's relevant for us to be able to nail down some of the facts. If we have one whistleblower that we know about, but he refers to they, I think it's relevant to be able to determine, not asking for names in this forum, but to be able to validate that there, in fact, were more than one whistleblower, because the issue around whether it was 2 weeks or whether it was in September is a fundamental part of the complaint. So that was a comment to you. The second comment was in regards to my original point, which I didn't really get to finish on, Minnesota State Senate policies. And you made the rebuttal that that it wasn't in the complaint. But in the third or fourth paragraph, four paragraph down, it talks about improper conduct, which includes conduct that violates rules or administrative policies.
Senator Harrington, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but which document are you looking at?
Statement.
Her statement. Okay.
Right. So on the fourth paragraph of that statement, it does reference violations of rules or administrative policies of the Senate. And I believe based on that, that is part of the complaint. And therefore, the Minnesota State Senate policies and rules are a relevant component of her original complaint.
All right.
To that point, Madam Chair.
Actually, I'd like to get back to, because we have moved on to deliberations, and I'd like to make sure that we focus and allow, because we do have rebuttals left. So we are currently, Senator Pappas has the opportunity to ask questions, but then we will have rebuttals. So I'd like to, maybe we should hold off for a little while, because we are straying into deliberations, and let's get this done with so that we can move on and focus on that. So, Senator Pappas, are there any further questions you may have?
It's almost like, when did you know and what did you know? Senator Michelle, were you aware at all of the relationship that was going on, the inappropriate relationship, before Colin Sheehan came to you?
I'll have to stop you there. That Senator Pappas, that moves into fact finding, and we are on we're on probable cause here. That's straying into issues that we don't want to touch here.
Hey, difficult.
It appears as though, Senator Pappas, you have no further questions. Then we are moving on to Senator Pappas. If you'd like to make a statement in rebuttal,
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Just a moment. I'm sorry, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, I'm not following the policy. Do we have an opportunity now to question the witness?
We will. I just thought if we finished the rebuttal issues up, then while we are deliberating, we will have the opportunity to ask questions. If you'd like to. But I'm just thinking
I have questions for both the witnesses.
Okay, because our questions started straying into deliberations, and so I wanted to refocus us, and I thought this way we will have this portion done, and we will be able to ask questions when we need to. I'm sorry, Senator Pappas, I didn't mean to interrupt. Please go ahead.
Just to begin with, Madam Chair, to Senator Ingebrigtsen's statement about Mr. Swigum, the article I passed out is from January 18th. From MinnPost, and it does. The first sentence is, Steve Swigum sees no conflict between his new job at the Minnesota Senate and his seat on the University Board of Regents. So he was an employee. He's the communications director. And then on page 3, the second paragraph is where his quote about the cover-up. So I don't know that I would have thought of that on my own if he hadn't mentioned that in the press. My motivation here just doesn't have anything to do with politics or political payback. It really is just about how we have to be really careful when we make statements on these sensitive and delicate matters that we don't provide statements that are misleading or false statements. And Senator Michel has corrected himself and given several possible dates until he finally settled on a date with corroboration from Mr. Sheehan as to when he first heard about this inappropriate relationship. My timing has simply to do with the legislative calendar because we're supposed to adjourn soon. Our Democratic leader had asked Senator Swigum to try to resolve this matter, so we knew exactly that the proper procedures had taken place and when people knew about what they knew. About what was going on. My sources are all from journalists, things that I've read about in the paper, reputable, a trusted Minnesota journalist. The public facts of the matter are established. Senator Michel has now agreed to the reports of the timeline and that he gave inaccurate information to the media, and this is not acceptable under Senate Rule 56. So I think he still owes us all an apology. He stated that he was trying to protect whistleblowers, multiple whistleblowers. We don't know, and I guess we can't know exactly who that is. We'll have to take his word for that, and he told us that he's under oath. But to even mention that there was a timeline then puts those whistleblowers at risk and does them a disservice because they should remain anonymous. Finally, in a sense, because the policy of the Senate says these things should be handled as discreetly as possible, I think that by holding the press conference, even though you were trying to be transparent, that you also violated the rules in not handling this as a discreet way and instead made it into a spectacle. You know, and yes, we should be respectful of the families involved, and I don't think that press conference was very helpful. Precedent, even though words aren't always ethics violations, precedent shows that senators may be held to punishment by the subcommittee due to words that they say. And Senator Dean Johnson was brought before the subcommittee for providing inaccurate information. I believe Senator Michel signed that complaint, and he did apologize on the Senate floor for providing inaccurate information. This punishment that I'm requesting is equivalent to that infraction. If the subcommittee does not decide to act on this complaint, it shows that Minnesota senators are allowed to mislead the public, to provide inaccurate information with no consequences, and I believe this is sending an unacceptable message, and the subcommittee should understand the message sending to the public about the transparency of government.
Senator Michel, would you like a rebuttal?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Again, this is a collection of cherry-picked quotes. And so I guess we're being criticized for working too fast, and then we're getting criticized for working too slow, that we were too transparent, and that we were part of a cover-up. I mean, we have run the spectrum of all the ways to criticize people who tried to do right by the Minnesota Senate. And I totally agree with Senator Pappas, we need to be careful with our words. We need to be careful with our employees. I do want to address at some point, Madam Chair, and I'd look to you for assistance with, I guess, today's clock and when you're taking things in. But I know there's a statement that we could offer from Mr. Swigum on this quote, which again is just totally cherry picked out of context, and Mr. Swigum has already spoken to that. But since Senator Pappas is hanging some importance on that, that can be addressed. And then, Madam Chair, if you'd allow us to make kind of a summary or a conclusion.
Please go ahead.
Madam Chair and the panel, we know you have in mind permanent rule 56.3, and we just ask you to remember a few things as you look at that. We submit that Senator Jeff Michel is ethical. He has acted ethically throughout this matter. He broke no Senate rules or norms of Senate behavior, even if the things in Senator Pappas's complaint and her attempts to expand the record today are true. He has not betrayed the public trust, and he did not bring dishonor or disrepute upon the Senate. People did bring dishonor and disrepute upon the Senate, and it's the people who created this mess, and it's the cynical political opportunists who are trying to capitalize on this mess who have done the same thing. And if this panel wants to help protect and defend the Senate's reputation and its honor, it will dismiss this baseless complaint.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think we are at the point where we are to the deliberations by the subcommittee, and I would like to remind us so that our discussions are focused. And Senator Michel and Mr. is it Mayor, if you would like to sit at the conference table, we will ask questions. But I just want to make sure that our deliberate. If you'd like to sit at the conference table, you're welcome to. Next.
Where would you like us, Madam Chair?
I just thought if you're more comfortable, wherever you're more comfortable.
You're comfortable right here, Madam Chair.
Then if everybody is on microphone, then we're fine. So, Senator Pappas, are you comfortable enough there? I just want to make sure as we go through this that, you know, our question is, are the facts presented in the complaint enough for a reasonable person to believe that there was a violation of the Minnesota Senate Rule 56? And then I as we look at the complaint, you know, 15 and 16, you know, paragraphs 15 and 16 kind of address the issue of the failure to act. So that's one of the questions. Paragraph 17 addresses the safe working environment. And then paragraph 18 asks about the false and misleading questions. So I just want to make sure that our deliberations are focused because of the obvious other issues that are involved here so that we understand what our purpose is and what our charge here is today before we move into the deliberations. And so we keep that in mind. And with that, Senator Ingebrigtsen, you had a question.
I do have a question, and it didn't. Thank you, Madam Chair. It didn't seem to be very clear. to Senator Pappas, and I'll ask the question of Senator Michelle, if I may.
Please, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
You talked about, Senator Michelle, about the reason the timeline, and this kind of goes to Senator Harrington's point about the playbook that the Senate has to play by, or the rules that you have, or the employment rules, if you will, of people. And one of the things that I would think that we certainly want to be probably more mindful than anything is dealing with issues that are such as this in a swift fashion, hopefully not to damage or hurt any of the employees of the Senate. And my question is, when you did state earlier, and I guess I just wanted to make that clear because it doesn't seem to be very clear here, that the reason that you, the timeline, the time factor here was from September to December, was that you were dealing with it as an administrative person, as an administrative person should, over employees, because you'd have some authority over employees, as well as Senator Koch, and that you didn't bring this right out immediately, because in doing so, it would have potentially hurt some of the witnesses or some of the whistleblowers, the referred to whistleblowers. Is that what, that was very clear to me. Is that exactly what you said?
Yes, sir.
Further discussion?
No, are we still asking questions, or are we doing deliberations?
You know, I think that if we want to deliberate and there are questions that we need to deal with at that time, I guess we can, however you feel more comfortable, if you'd like to ask all of your questions and then...
Madam Chair and Senator Michelle, I'm the one that made the issue of Steve Svigum's report here and the comments that he has made to the media. Did he play a large role in management at this time when you were going through this?
Madam Chair, no.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think that is moving beyond. I mean, when you're starting to ask about Steve Swigum's involvement, I guess I'm a little. I wasn't quite clear, even though Senator Michelle said no, I wasn't quite sure what your question was.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas has put this document in front of us here, and someplace in this document it said that he refers to this as a cover-up.
Yep.
What kind of statement? What am I supposed to take from his statement if he was not even involved in this to start with, other than what he and like the rest of us are hearing in the media?
Is this deliberations?
Yep, Senator Sharon.
What I understand that to be about is that in the discussions between Senator Pappas and Senator Michelle, there is some pushing and shoving about whether or not this is a legitimate complaint or if it has partisan motivation. And in discussing it as partisan motivation, Senator Michelle was suggesting that it was Senator Pappas that was suggesting that it was a cover-up, and she was presenting information to indicate that that was not her motivation and that she needs to continue to keep referencing what she heard from Svigum, and then gave documentation to say that the origination of the idea of a cover-up is not from Senator Pappas, but from Steve Svigum. That's all that's about.
Madam Chair,
Senator Ingebrigtsen,
did Steve Svigum bring this to a complaint? It's just strictly his opinion because he's not even an employee that's working with management during this whole thing. So my point is, really, his statement of I guess being involved in the Republican Party, that's gonna merit something? I guess I don't quite follow that.
Well,
what you're trying to show is that you
may or may not put merit on it,
right.
But it is a legitimate response to the suggestion in the redefining of what the motivation of Senator Pappas is from one of sincere concern about the legitimacy of this complaint to calling it a partisan politics. And she simply is responding to that by saying, Steve Sigman is not a Democrat. Steve Sigman is a Republican, and he's the one that made this statement. So that's a very different issue as to whether or not you want to take his statement as legitimate or not. But that is a response to a redefinition of asking this committee to disregard this complaint as a partisan maneuver rather than as a sincere and legitimate concern about the reputation of the Minnesota Senate.
Senator Harrington.
The first conversation where the word cover-up was used didn't come from Senator Pappas. In fact, it came 2 or 3 months after that first comment was made, and that first comment came from Steve Swick. I don't exactly know the timeline in terms of when he became an employee and the communications director for the majority party, but depending on where that timeline would be, he would be part of the inner circle of the leadership of the majority party, I would assume. And decisions about press conferences, decisions about what was said in it said about the activities of the past majority leader. At the time of when this statement was made, as far as we know, he was the communications director for the majority party. I would think that you'd have to give some weight to someone who was clearly in a major and a senior leadership position within that body. And to say we should disregard it and make it into a partisan piece because 3 months later, Senator Pappas repeats his statement doesn't make any sense to me.
You know, I'm gonna move away from that specific Swigum statement and look at some of the other parts of the complaint that we do have in front of you. And, you know, I mentioned them before, you know, you take a look at paragraphs 15 and 16, and the issue there is basically there's a question of whether Senator Michelle took appropriate action and addressed the matter swiftly. And we did talk, Senator Harrington, you mentioned the, at some point, the policy, the Senate employee policy book and how we're dealing with those. But there's no evidence in the complaint. There's nothing to back up the fact that the policies weren't followed. Senator Michelle, by his own admission, or by the complaint itself, in paragraph 8, indicates that he contacted Human Resources. I believe in paragraph 11, he says he sought help. Paragraph 12, they were gathering information. So I think that there is within the complaint, there is evidence that he actually did deal with the policies the best he could to the of the Senate. So that would be addressing HR. So whether or not, there's no evidence here he didn't follow those policies of the Senate.
Madam President, I have to disagree with you. The second bullet point within the policy says that complaints, investigations, and resolutions will be handled discreetly as possible, with information being shared only with those who have a need.
Excuse me, Senator Harrington, what are you referring to? We don't have
the Senate
that in
policy.
Front of us. Well, Senator Harrington, that's not part of the complaint. I mean,
it's referenced,
we don't have it in front of us.
It is referenced in the complaint, and I certainly...
By chapter and verse here? I mean, general...
Proper conduct includes conduct that violates a rule or administrative policy
okay.
of the Senate.
Well, there's no evidence that... And I'm sorry,
and this is a policy of the Minnesota Senate, so
argument.
It is certainly referenced in her
okay,
complaint.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure we were dealing with... We don't have it in front of us. It would have been helpful to know that you were going to reference that piece. Please continue. I'm sorry, Senator Harrington.
So it specifically says that that complaints, investigations, resolution will be handled as discreetly as possible, with information being shared only with those who have a need to know and as may be required by the legislative obligation to comply with the law. I don't know how a press conference is handling this problem discreetly as possible. And making a public announcement of it certainly seems more broad than the category that I would say a need to know would involve.
But, Senator Harrington, I would also say that it says discreetly as possible. and as possible.
And a press conference is as discreetly as possible?
I won't venture to move beyond this complaint, but discreetly as possible is a term of art where you would decide there is a decision that has to be made if it is possible to be discreet any longer. And that's not something that's whether or not that was the decision is not necessarily the question in the complaint today.
Well, it certainly is a relevant question in the complaint that that the press conference is not acting in as discreet as possible. And that, in fact, the press conference is, in fact, how the public disrepute for the Senate. The public wasn't aware of this, as far as I know. My understanding of the timeline was that there was an announcement that the Senate Majority Leader was stepping down. There's no disrepute of the Senate at that. People step down all the time. We've certainly had a large number of members this year that have made that decision to do that. There's no imputation of disrepute by simply that action. The disrepute comes when the press conference comes the next day and an announcement of this is then broadcast over every major channel and over all of the different news media. That's where the disrepute for the Senate begins. And I would once again argue that that's not being discreet, that it is certainly broadcasting the information to a body that is far beyond that group that needed to know.
To that point.
And Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, thank you. To that point, Senator Harrington, the term discreet and the policy that you're quoting here, I would say that a great amount of discreet was used when his testimony was that he notified and was notified and actually talked to the Majority Leader immediately. And to me, trying to handle it over a certain period of time is certainly not of any disrepute. It is simply trying to handle a situation that is very tough. As the senator has explained, he's not only a member of the state Senate, and we're talking about the majority of the leader of the state Senate. We're also talking about families. We're talking about marriages. We're talking about employees. And you and I did not know about this until all of a sudden the news conference did come out. Now, we can argue all day long about whether that's the right place to make the announcement. The bottom line is Senator Michel used a lot of he was very deliberate in what he was doing and trying to resolve the problem. And it was taking some time, and obviously it did not resolve itself. And finally, eventually, it had to be brought out. Now, when you talk about policies and guidelines,
May I ask you a quick question? What you just said, just to follow up on something you're saying, there was a confrontation, as Senator Harrington said, and following that confrontation, there was a resignation. And
I'm sorry, what confrontation are you talking about? When he first brought it.
In a private meetings in which the issue of the inappropriate relationship was discussed. This is without any public participation.
Right.
This is before the press conference. And a decision was made for a resignation on the part of the Senate Majority Leader. And that resignation was made, and the rationale for that resignation was given. All of that, to that point, could be considered discreet. There's no understanding in Senator Harrington's statement as to why we then went to a press conference to make an announcement that was very different than what was communicated by the Senate Majority Leader that started this whole process of embarrassment for lots of people. That's what Senator Harrington is saying. It became, up until that point, whether it was swift, which is what this is about, is debatable yet. We haven't gotten there. But on the issue of discreet, that being discreet ended at the press conference, and there's no evidence here to indicate there was a necessity for a press conference.
Madam Chair, is it too late for us to ask a question?
State your question, Mr. Mayor, and then I will decide if it's too late.
fair enough. Got to rethink my question now. The question is, I don't believe anywhere in the complaint has it ever been suggested that the existence of the press conference itself was somehow a violation of the ethics rules. And given that that isn't in the complaint, why are we talking about it?
And thank you very much. I appreciate that input. And I do see the point, because I was actually just about to kind of try to refocus us on the 15, 16, 17, and 18 in the complaint that we are to be addressing. And
I'm happy to
you know,
do
the
that.
Discretion, you know, where is it in the complaint that Senator Pappas says he was so indiscreet that it violated the ethics, that it violated there? I understand your point, Senator Harrington, that there are Senate employee handbook rules, but I also need us to focus on the issues that have been made, that have been questioned, so that we are able to make those answers.
There is an allegation of improper conduct citing 56.3 that says improper conduct includes conduct that violates a rule or administrative policy of the Senate.
But Senator Harrington, I'm asking, where is it that Senator Pappas claims in her complaint that he was so indiscreet? Because that's not a portion of her complaint. She mentioned it, but
it
I would like
relevant,
to
see. It is a relevant and embedded part of the complaint, because she alleges improper conduct, and one of the descriptions of improper conduct would be violation of Senate rules. So it's a subsumed component of improper conduct.
Madam President.
Senator Sharon.
And in addition to that, which I agree with, that went beyond the need to know, that, and I will go back to what I was saying earlier, this is in relationship to the portion of the complaint that's about fully and swiftly addressing the alleged inappropriate relationship to act swiftly to restore safe working environment, points 16 and 17 in the complaint. Which is specific to what the complaint is about. Because a limitation has been established on whether or not we cannot in any way get collaborative information about who was spoken to when and what the feedback was and what the direction was and how timely, or all we have is factual. And even though the senator would like us to say, because he's under oath, we should accept what he's saying, that is not a reasonable measure for me as a committee member to say, because somebody's under oath and saying something that they wouldn't be deceptive, and that he ought to be able to confirm what he's saying with some kind of information about who he spoke to, what they said, and
well,
what
Senator
actions
Sharon,
he took.
But some of that is not, I don't think, in any way Senator Michelle's issues. I think this is some of the questions that are coming up are issues of we can't stray into that potential litigation area.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So
I understand
I don't
that.
Want,
I
don't. I
I've understand
a
that.
Concerned that you're saying.
I understand that. I understand that. But you need to hear what I am saying, and Senator Michelle, I'm hoping, hears what I'm saying, is that because that boundary is being established, we cannot affirm. We cannot use a statement from Senator Michelle that just trust me, I did act swiftly and I did contact people and I did talk to people, without us having any confirmation of that, because we can't.
But you did, Senator Sharon. I may argue that you do have confirmation that he. If we assume that in the complaint, I mean, and in a probable cause hearing, you assume that the complaint is true, that the facts are stated are true. It says here he talked to HR. I mentioned the paragraph. I believe it was paragraphs 8. He mentions it, paragraph 11. So the facts in the complaint point that he contacted HR, had discussions. And in addition, I believe that Senator Michelle said that here too. So
Would you point to me where you're saying there's facts demonstrated in the complaint that he acted swiftly?
Paragraph 8, he states, Michelle said he contacted Senate Human Resources officers and lawyers on September 23rd. Paragraph 11, he mentions there that I spoke to, literally within maybe hours for sure the next day, I spoke to people staffed with Secretary Ludeman's office and also sought some outside legal NHR help. Paragraph 12, subdivision B, he mentions there are two choices, one of which you are, professional and legal advice. We were gathering and the legal and HR knowledge that we needed. So there is information contained within this that we assume the facts stated in the complaint are true. There are facts that he sought help, that he sought, went through the policies provided, went to HR. There's nothing in the complaint to say that he didn't. I would argue that the proof here shows that he did seek help, that he did go to HR, that he did try to deal with the situation properly.
Well, I would say that the complaint simply indicates that he stated these things. It doesn't do anything to affirm for us that it in fact did happen.
Well, in some
what affirms for us what did happen is the timetable. You know, we know the time from September until action in December. We know that factually. We know that that there was complaints because that was confirmed by a staffer. That's what we know about that.
But there's no proof that he did. There's no facts stating in here that he didn't take action.
Senator Pappas, have any proof that
Senator
this did not go on?
Excuse me?
Does Senator Pappas have any proof that these statements are inaccurate? Is there any documents here saying that Jeff Michelle's
What I'm saying
as to how he was handling it, I don't see any of that.
What I'm saying is because we're restricted as a committee, been restricted as a committee to ask the people to get the names of the people that were spoken to confirm this, that we can neither accept or reject the validity of it. It doesn't provide a fact for us. The only thing we then have as a fact is the timetable the report from the staffer.
Senator Ingebrigtsen and members, we've got to remember to go through the chair.
Madam Chair, maybe Senator Pappas could answer this then. Has any of the staff that were involved in this, both either partisan or nonpartisan, come to you with concerns about the way things were handled?
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Ingebrigtsen, it was my hope that this hearing would uncover the facts of the case because we only have Senator Michelle's statements, and it can... I mean, you can take that as you will, but still no action was taken during that period. I mean, he could have been talking to people, but we don't know why nothing came of it. And I was hoping that we could find out why nothing came of it and then why Mr. Swigham called the whole thing a cover-up.
Yeah.
And it was not until December when it appeared that it was imminent that it was going to go public that then there was the confrontation where Senator Koch resigned. So why did it take so long? That was my question. Why did it take so long if all these people were being talked to and consulted with for anything to happen?
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, to that point.
I think since we allowed Senator Pappas to address that, I think we only fair to let Senator Michelle address that. And then, of course, the two of you. Senator Michelle.
Madam Chair.
I think this is self-evident, but I think it's worth stating. Of the many reasons why we needed to be deliberate, why you could say, why did it take so long, is because we were trying to be discreet, which the complainant seems to be demanding. You got it. We were discreet.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. And to the point in the question that I asked about Senator Pappas having any of the employees of the State Senate come to her, Madam Chair and members, making allegations against another senator is not and should not be taken lightly. I certainly don't, and I'm not suggesting, Senator Pappas, that you are. However, if I have a complaint, and hear me out, if I'm complaining about the way something was handled because I was concerned about the safety of the employees that are working for me and also or the other party or nonpartisan staff on an issue similar to this that was inappropriately handled, and the safety, and I think that's even in the complaint is addressed, the safety of those employees were at risk, at least that's the allegation, it would seem to me that I would at least have somebody on the staff come to me and register at least some kind of a complaint before I would take action against one of my Senate companions, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican. And I don't see that, and I'm just not hearing that.
Senator Harrington.
2 points. One, I'm not arguing your Senator Ingebrigtsen point about whether they were discreet from the time of complaint in September until the press conference in December, but once the press conference started, discretion left. That would be my point, that the time of being discreet ceased when they called for a press conference. They called for a press conference. They made a public announcement. There was no pressing need to do that. Second point, When you talk about safety of the people that were involved with this, the key party and the only party that we know of at this point who actually has been identified as a whistleblower came forward on their own subsequent to the press conference. But they had already left Senate employ a month and more before that. How were they unsafe, given that they were no longer employed by the Senate, they were no longer a state employee, they were now in the private sector, and they felt so unsafe that, in fact, they voluntarily came forward about 5 days after their press conference to disclose the facts. That doesn't sound like there is a safety issue from the point of view of the whistleblower. There was no compulsion, as far as I can tell, for them to come forward and disclose the timeline. So I don't think that we can make a case for safety, and we're being precluded from asking any other questions about who else would have been unsafe, because that would lead into the whole issue of trying to disclose who the whistleblowers are. So we're in some ways in a catch-22 here. The one whistleblower that we know of didn't feel unsafe, came on their own and disclosed. And the other whistleblowers, we can't even ask a question about. So we can't validate that at all.
And Senator Harrington, I think that, and members, I think that part of the issue is our hands are tied because of the pending litigation. There's no question. So, I am advised by legal counsel that we can't stray into that.
And Madam Chair, I am not straying to that. I'm trying to stay with the facts as I have.
Them.
So the only one last piece of this, okay, we can't talk, you didn't want to talk about the timeline, but we can talk about Senator Michelle's statements as to whether or not they are inaccurate or misleading. According to the complaint, in the complaint, I believe it's in paragraph 4, in the press conference, reporter asks, and the first complaint was about 2 weeks ago. Senator Michelle, yes. Pretty clear statement. Go to the next page.
And where are you, Senator Harrington? I'm sorry.
I'm in the complaint. So I was in paragraph 4,
yep.
Item C. Paragraph 9, radio interview with Ron Rosenbaum. Broadcast on December 31st, and Michelle asserted, first became aware of the alleged inappropriate relationship, saying, I guess the first conversation that I had about this dates back to the end of September. In one press statement that he voluntarily made, he says it's 2 weeks before December 15th. In another press statement that he voluntarily makes, he says it's the end of September. Those two are facts that you said we should assume to be true in the complaint. To me, that is fairly compelling evidence that, in fact, he did make false or inaccurate statements on this matter.
Well, and Senator Sharon, did you?
Well, I think also there is the intervening information that Mr. Sheehan brought forth information about the first interaction with the deputy in regard to this problem, which contradicted the statement of Senator Jeff Michel, which then resulted in a correction. So, and what you're speaking to is the other complaint, which is about misleading or misdirecting the press as a part of this complaint. I did not hear Senator Michel deny that that was true.
Senator Michel, did you have something to add?
Madam Chair, I was asking, I was seeking your permission to try to give a little more context to the press availability on the 16th. I would like to do that, Madam Chair.
Very limited, Senator Michel. We are running up against session time. In addition, we have about 12 minutes before session.
Well, Madam Chair, I made reference to this, and I think I probably share Senator Harrington's. Senator Harrington and I are probably 20th century members. We're not quite up to speed with how fast the media is moving. So, Madam Chair, I think these words are important. We never had a press conference. What the members that I joined with that afternoon did was a press availability. There was no written documents. There was very little planning. This story was out, Senator Harrington. It was out. And so we were being asked what our role was. We were getting those kind of questions. And so instead of, as I said in the statement, letting things come out in drips and drabs, we said, we're going to say exactly what happened. This is when we had a meeting. These are the kind of things that were said. We felt, in order to be transparent, that it was time. That it was time. Some of that, again, was just a reaction to how fast and how speedy this kind of story takes off. But as you recall, the night, the evening before, maybe two evenings before, is when the majority leader first indicated she was stepping down. So things in the media, things in the public started to accelerate. We were explaining our role. We did not lead on that story. That story was already in the press and confirmed. So I just thought that would be helpful to the committees to put that into context.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's it just adds,
Senator Sharon.
That adds to my concern. I was less concerned before the statement, but now concerned that we're talking about, I'm not on the deceptive, I'm moving away from what you were talking about in terms of the deceptive statements, back to the SWIFT process versus this cover-up language, which raised concern for Senator Pappas, is that it was the leaking of the beginning that the story was coming out that not swift action in regard to the employees and protecting the employees and changing the work environment so that they would be able to work in an environment that was free of the conflicts that would occur under the circumstances from the time in September until December till this was dealt with, that action did not occur until December, and that it may have occurred because the story was beginning to leak, not because there was concern and regard for creating swiftly an environment that is safe and trustworthy for the employees.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, members, I'll really go out on the limb here and say I'm not so sure what I would do different. And I think Senator Michelle has stated that. And again, I have to try and put myself in his position. And I hope folks can go to that position for a while. You have the Senate Majority Leader that is obviously a overseer of you as well as the rest of the Senate, controls the whole Senate, is obviously a dear friend of yours, and something like this is brought to you by an employee, which rightfully so, had to be very hard in itself. We're talking about an employee now who's heaven forbid, that should have to think about this, but let's be real. They're going to think about, boy, if I'm going to report this, what's going to happen to me? But nevertheless, they did, to the Deputy Majority Leader. The Deputy Majority Leader did deal with it immediately by confronting. And I would say probably at that point say, please try and take care of this. We know what kind of a deal it was. It wasn't that somebody was beating somebody up. We know what kind of a deal it was. It wasn't a very easy deal. Families are involved. Marriages are involved. And time goes on, and things, you know, I'm not going to second guess what was going on. During this time, I failed to see, and I think Senator Harrington has said that apparently there's no safety issues because nobody else is coming forward, which I hope and trust that they would if there was, if they feared for their safety during this interim. The interim we're talking between September when it was first reported and when it was finally hit the media. And then that's where the word cover-up seems to be, you know, coming from, covering up from September to December. I contend that it wasn't a cover-up. It was somebody trying to resolve a problem, and it didn't get resolved. It did not get resolved, and I think those senators at that time did the right thing by getting it out. And were they maybe thinking they should have done it a month before that? Boy, I guess we'll never know. Would I have done it a little earlier? Maybe. John, you'd have done it right away. Maybe that would have potentially made things worse. So to second guess somebody in that position, I tell you, is not an easy task. Did Jeff Michelle personally go out there to do ill disrepute to the Senate or try and make all of us look terrible? I just can't get there. I just can't see that. I don't understand where anybody would even think that in dealing with the situation that he was dealing with. And for us to, as has been reported, sideline quarterback this thing, I would venture to guess that anybody sitting at this table would have done it any differently, and if they would have, maybe so. This does not bring up to the severity, as Senator Pappas talked about in her statement here. Senator Johnson was reprimanded by the Senate, I believe, for lying, and was referred to, and I think his apology was embellishment, that he embellished something. This doesn't even qualify for that. Doesn't even come close. He's not lying to anybody. So I just fail to see why we're dealing with this. And again, I don't have anybody, and Senator Pappas has said she's had nobody come to her say that they don't feel safe because this thing is handled the way it was. So I don't think it's any more than what Senator Michelle has said. It's good political stuff. And it, quite frankly, it's dragging us all through the mud a little bit further.
Senator Harrington.
Just for a point of clarification, I didn't say that no one was unsafe. I just said that the one person that we can talk about that was a whistleblower seems to be beyond the reach of retribution or retaliation because they left employ of the Senate before this all came out. And so that there did not seem to be a safety issue with the one whistleblower that we know of at this point, that others may still feel unsafe who are still employed here.
Yeah.
I didn't make the statement that because we can't talk about them, and we're in a box that catch 22.
Talk about them because they never came forward, John.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Well, That's one possibility, but there is also the possibility that they haven't come forward because they don't feel safe. And we can't know and can't explore that conversation because of the legal situation we're in. The other piece that I will just briefly mention is that per Senator Michel's own statements, he did consult with HR. I would assume if he did consult with HR, he would have been informed of what the Senate policies were. And the Senate policies do speak to discretion. They do speak to being prompt. So that if he, in fact, was doing exactly what you said, doing due diligence, following up with HR, that he then would have been afforded the counsel of what the Senate policy is and good, competent advice about that. And that this does not speak to someone who followed that counsel. Last but not least, we said, you made the point that you don't believe he intentionally besmirched the Senate. And the question for me is whether this was an intentional or unintentional act. You and I have been there where we've made that call on tragic cases, and we've said that whether it was intentional or unintentional, the facts are the facts. And we hold people accountable for end results, even when we can't show that there was a mens rea, an evil mind in play at this. We still hold people accountable for the results.
Senator Sharon?
Yes. May I ask Senator Michel a question?
Yes.
Senator Michel, in the complaint, what the complaint really speaks to, besides swift action, is, if I can see the exact language, betrayed the public's trust by making false and clearly misleading public statements regarding when he became aware of the alleged inappropriate relationship. Do you believe that you provided misleading statements to the public? And
no.
Do you think that's you do not think you
Senator
did?
Senator Michel.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, and I've tried to be clear on this in my statement and in subsequent discussions, but what guided me was the need to be very careful with two things, with the identities of staff and with any – and because I was trying to be careful with the identities of staff, I also had to be careful to not be precise about timelines because that would tie back to specific staff and potentially expose them. Expose whistleblowers, expose staff who did not wish for that. So, sorry if I stepped on your question, but that is what I was wrestling with in an attempt to be transparent. Here's what the members have been doing and been up to, but also trying to protect the employees.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Senator Michel. I am struck by how, in dealing with the facts, we keep hearing context to understand where I was coming from or what I was thinking at the time as an explanation for why I misled the press. But the answer apparently is yes, I did mislead them, but I had a good reason for doing it. So, therefore, misleading is okay. And I'm separating all of the context conversation. This was a difficult situation, no question about that. But at the heart of the complaint is when we deal with difficult things, which we do absolutely every day, that we conduct ourselves. In this particular part of the complaint has to do with not reframing something or trying to change the subject or trying to refocus something, which we're all doing, which is being done during this hearing right now, but it goes past the boundary when the information is inaccurate. That's and when I ask the question, Senator Michel, I hear you giving explanation and rationale for protecting and what you were trying to do, but not acknowledging that the statement was inaccurate. That you chose in that moment to deal with the problem at hand for you as protecting the staff or whatever the rationale is to be deceptive. When the ethical behavior would have been to say, I would prefer not to answer that question because I have other obligations or responsibilities to protect the identities right now of people who are communicating complaints.
Mr. Meyer.
Thank you. And Mayor, Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, perhaps because you were talking over each other, you didn't hear Senator Michel, the answer to your question about whether or not he gave false and clearly misleading public statements was no. He then went on and talked about context, but just to make sure you heard, because you mischaracterized what he said no.
Well, then I may
Senator Sharon.
Then I may follow up to say, are you saying then that the comments that are summarized here under number 4 in the ethical complaint are inaccurate?
Madam Chair and
Mr. Mayor,
Senator Sharon, what's in the complaint is deemed to be true for purposes of this hearing. That's what the law and the standard says. So we don't need to spend a lot of time on that.
You know,
not really responsive to the question, though, is it?
Senator Harrington,
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if that's really responsive to the question.
That was a question.
Well, Senator Harrington, I think that was Mr. Mayor's response, and I'm sure that he's fully aware of the issues that we could potentially have with litigation.
Okay, and may I just ask one more question?
Senator Pappas,
when you articulated these statements, from where did you get these statements?
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, they were from various newspaper articles, transcripts from an NPR interview. So they were printed in the press, and they were printed under quotations. So they were direct quotations from Senator Michel.
I know we should have gaveled in about 4 minutes ago, and I'm assuming they haven't because I'm not there, and Senator Senjum's not there yet. So I'm assuming we haven't gaveled in at this point. But I did want to just say a couple of things about the false and misleading statements. You know, we're using the information here, and Senator Harrington, you pointed out, I believe it was paragraph 4C, where he says, a response to a reporter, and the first complaint was about 2 weeks ago, and he says, yes. He doesn't actually say 2 weeks, but then in addition to that, he says, the days are starting to meld into each other here. So he states in that same quote that the days are murky, and I think probably all of us can relate to that, where when you're busy and trying to do a lot of things, the things do get a little unclear sometimes. I'm not claiming that's, but he's in response. He's responding there. He's not stating it. He's just responding to a reporter's question.
To that point, he didn't say no, We went through Halloween, Thanksgiving. We're buying Christmas presents by the time the statements got made. It's hard for me to go a couple days melding, a couple weeks might meld, but we're talking 3 months here. We're talking, you know, seasons have changed in the time frame that he's talking about here. And it's hard for me to be able to reconcile, the days are kind of getting blurry. If he confused Thursday for Friday, I get the benefit of the doubt there. September to December, it's hard. It's very hard for me to reconcile.
Well, Senator Harrington, I can understand that, but I think when you mentioned the yes, you left out part of the rest of that direct quote, and so I wanted to make sure that, you know, that was pointed out. You know, he also, there are several places throughout where he uses various, or according to the complaint, various things, you know, over last several weeks, and then even I believe it was Senator Sharon who mentioned the portion that Colin Sheehan in paragraph six, where we talk about that. You know, there's 3 months ago, and I think that at one point during the information, Senator Michel even talks about that, but then we both then met with, so we don't have
very definitive timelines in that quote. You know, it says then, and met the next day, subsequently. I think it's pretty murky, and I think that the fact that Senator Michel has explained that that there was some issue at being vague to try to assist whistleblowers in keeping their identities anonymous, I think that is maybe the reason he's not necessarily false or misleading. I think that he is more vague. I think the term that you could use to describe those are vague as opposed to actual false statements. Senator Sharon.
That's your opinion.
Absolutely. And you've been able to
I just want to make sure.
Opinion.
It just sounded like it was a declarative statement rather than an opinion.
Well, I'm declaring my opinion, Senator Sharon. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, members, I'm looking at Senator Pappas's request here to an apology, and I haven't been following this probably as much as a lot of folks have, because, frankly, the world does go on, and there's other things out there that are more important, I think, to Minnesotans. But Senator Michel, in his opening statement, has said he's apologized for putting people through this. I think there's probably an apology coming from. Well, there I'm going to probably go into the wrong area that we can't go. So I'll hold myself to that, but. I truly feel that with the circumstances that were leadership was put up against here with the Senate Majority Leader, it's unfortunate, and I think the word I'm sorry that folks have been put through this, not only the Senate but staff, has been probably repeated several times. I'm not going to throw a number out there because I'll get into trouble, but I know it certainly has happened. It happened again today with the senator's testimony, but at the same time, I still know that there's no intention. I don't think anybody would intend to hold the Senate in any disrepute or ill repute or whatever the words are with regards to an issue like this. These are tough issues. These aren't criminal issues. John, you and I used to deal with criminal issues. They were more factual. Not that there's not any facts involved here, but you know, we come from that world where it's pretty black and white. It's either yes or no, and that's the way it goes. You move forward, and this is an area where again, I dare guess what anybody else would do in this position, and I would just hope that somebody else in this committee of four ever gets put into that position. They'll be confronted with something like this. They will do the best that they do, and I don't think Senator Michel has done anything less. And I don't think he's brought or intentionally tried to bring any ill repute to the Senate. And I think it's should just resolve it right here, done with it.
Senator Fishbach.
Senator Sharon.
I just have one more question for Senator Michel, if you wouldn't mind, and then I think. We make a decision about whether or not there's probable cause, right? Is that the next action? But may I ask another question? In the complaint, Senator Michel, there is a series of documented statements with quotation marks, and it refers to the conversation on public radio between Mr. Sheehan and public radio about becoming aware of the potential relationship. And then he says, he's referring to himself there. Spoke to the staff person and got confirmation. This is, we're talking about Sheehan here. And then we both then met with Senator Coe and she confirmed the relationship. Is we referring to you in this situation or to the other person in the relationship? Do you know? The next day I met with Senator Coe to discuss the situation, and then I subsequently met with the Deputy Majority Leader. So these meetings were not including you. It was after these meetings that the meeting was held with you. So there isn't anything in here that indicates to me at which point, after you discovered the concern for the Senate staff, when you first intervened directly with the majority leader. Can you answer when that was?
May I caution you, yeah. Senator Michelle, that we may be stepping out of the complaint.
I'm really trying to find a way to help find some evidence that there was swift action here. And everything keeps leading, even the statements here that the swift action was by the chief of staff here and not by our deputy. So I wish we could find some other facts to confirm. To disconfirm what Senator Pappas is putting in her
Senator
in her
Sharon, I am concerned for counsel's advice is to protect the Senate from in the case of any potential litigation, and I and we are looking at probable cause. We're not in a fact finding mode at this point, so we're not in the investigation. So. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, to that point, I still contend that moving swift, getting the message right away, and dealing with it the very day or within a day, in my book, is swift when you're talking about personnel issues, and I don't think there's any question whether that went on. So, Madam Chair, I move that this complaint be dismissed as there's no probable cause to move forward.
Senator Ingebrigtsen has made that motion. I know we've deliberated, but any specifics, discussion to that? Otherwise, we can.
I won't be able to support the motion because it is completely out of context with what the facts are.
Well, then.
And that there's adequate probable cause for us to continue.
On that motion, all in favor of Senator Ingebrigtsen motion, Senator Ingebrigtsen's motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no.
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 Motion dies on a tie. Any other motions?
Would it appropriate to introduce an alternative motion that there is probable cause?
To have a further investigation is what you're.
What would the alternatives be? You know.
Well, there's three of them in the rules. No probable cause. Proceed with investigation, which would be the issue of finding probable cause, or vote to defer action until a certain time. Those would be the three options. I mean, because it's very clear in what our options are here.
I should have those in front of me so I can see them. May I ask for clarification?
Mm-hmm.
If to vote to defer action until a certain time, is that to set this up sort of like a recess and then we come back and continue to deliberate?
I think it could be interpreted several ways. I mean, that would be one of the interpretations.
So that could be the motion under that, under vote to defer action until a certain time. So
yes, I'm assuming that you would designate a certain time.
Yeah. Proceed with its investigation, which would mean right now, or proceed with its investigation.
Yes, I'm assuming that would mean.
Madam Chair, that would.
Someone on the phone?
Madam Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
The motion to proceed with further, you'd have to have an agreement upon that there is probable cause. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
Yeah,
that would be that.
That's part of my motion. That's part of my
that
motion,
would be that
but
third
I'm not.
Option.
I'm not. You've already made a motion
to dismiss
of a finding of no probable cause, which
yes.
was defeated. So now we need another motion. So the alternative would be There probably is a number of alternatives, I suppose, to vote. We could just vote to defer action without...
To a certain time
without finding probable cause or not probable cause.
And Senator Sharon, I might make the suggestion that if we are going to defer action until a certain time, that it be after the pending litigation, the proceedings of the pending litigation, after that, because obviously we've run into issues when we start having discussions here. It could have great implications on any kind of litigation. So if we were going to defer it to a certain time, I might suggest that it be after that be resolved.
Madam Chair, the litigation might well carry on for years.
And
I agree.
And Senator Harrington, I understand that, but I don't think that we could probably do a legitimate investigation, because my understanding, and we won't get into details, but my understanding of in the past when there has been ethics charges against a senator who was involved in pending litigations, that there, and I'm not going to ask for details. I know that counsel could provide details, but I'm going to do my best to describe it, that when there was pending litigation, there was ethics charges, they were trying to do a dual track, it became a mess because you would have witnesses coming in front of you who said, I can't talk because there's pending litigation. So there was no use in doing any kind of ethics committee investigation at that time, because there was the higher issue was the pending litigation and the witnesses were
the
not
other,
answering.
The other complicating factor of that, in my mind, though, is that by the time the litigation may well be resolved, given Senator Michel's decision not to seek re-election, he no longer would be a member of the Minnesota Senate to give the apology if the finding of fact were to show that he did, in fact, not act in a prompt and swift manner, or that he was indiscreet in the way he handled this. And so I'm not sure that there is then any, if we delay this beyond the term of his office, whether in fact there is any meaningful activity that can take place.
I understand, Senator Harrington. I just don't know if we can legitimately do an investigation with pending litigation going on.
Can counsel add any insight to this?
Maybe counsel does want to add that precedent we have or the background that we have on that.
Madam Chair and Senator Harrington, the specific example that I think may have some relevance to this situation involves former Senator Skip Finn. And without going into a great deal of detail, he initially pled guilty to a misdemeanor charge. I have a capsule summary of it here in late 1994. And the Subcommittee on Ethical Conduct began an investigation into his conduct on January 3rd of 95. There were numerous hearings held, and at a later point in time, he then withdrew his guilty plea. At that point in time, as the subcommittee attempted to proceed further, it was unable to obtain the cooperation it needed from a number of potential witnesses. He was then later indicted in June of 1995, and then in October, he resigned his leadership positions and finally convicted the following year in April of 1996. He resigned from the Senate on April 26th, effective July 1st. So the subcommittee was never able to conclude the work at hand.
May I ask some more clarifying questions?
Senator Sharon.
You know, there are two complaints here. One that would be difficult to explore further without which is what action occurred between September and December in terms of swiftly acting without some further discovery, I guess. But the other part of the complaint about whether or not, as the complaint says, there was making false statements that were misleading, that doesn't require further discovery. You know, I don't think that we would need necessarily to have the protections of a resolved court case in order to have our discussion or agreement or disagreement about that portion of the complaint. So I think that we can, I would be willing to move, I don't know if you all support it, but to go back to this, to make a finding of probable cause and proceed with our investigation.
Senator Sharon has made her motion. Any discussion to that motion?
Yes, I do.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, so you're alleging that there's probable cause, Senator Sharon, here to move forward with the complaints on the fact that the statements of Senator Michelle in December, with regards to this first coming up in, I'm sorry, December? September?
It's December.
Making a statement that it was a couple of weeks and it turned out to be 3 months. That's what the whole thing is about, is about those misleading statements to the media. That's what this is all about. So that's, do you think that there's enough evidence here when he's said that, you know, with all the confusion and with all the with his testimony obviously being confronted and having these two things on his mind and wanting to protect the people of the Senate, wanting to protect the both partisan and nonpartisan employees, that there's really enough evidence here to move forward with what? Sorry.
Senator Sharon.
I'm sorry, I'm not getting it.
The taped recordings are the evidence. We don't have to find somebody to come and confirm this, which we've been restricted from doing on the other portions of the complaint. So question is whether or not the Senate ethics requires, if being deceptive is against the ethical standards of the committee and dealing with press, then it brings a windfall of problems and embarrassment to the Senate, diminishes our reputation, confirms the public's cynicism about us as elected officials, then it is a legitimate complaint brought forward by Senator Pappas in and of itself. There is, in addition to that, the issue of whether or not there was, as also stated, swift response. That's one's a little harder for us because we can't get Senate counsel to tell us that we can get some information about that. So, but we do have enough facts, I think, given what we have to work with, to indicate that certainly a significant period of time went by. We only know that Senator Cole was approached by staff.
Senator Koch?
Yeah, Senator Koch. It's right here. That Mr. Sheehan said that he approached the staff members about this issue. And then Deputy Majority Leader, we don't know. We don't have anything in here that indicates that there was swift action on the part of it. What we have is a timeline that indicates there wasn't swift action, which is a part of the complaint. So I think that's adequate for us to be able to say there's probable cause and that we should continue with our investigation. Then we can continue whether or not you want what continual investigation we can do about that. Yeah. But there's adequate information here for us to say there's probable cause.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
We get back to the swift action thing again, and I guess I'm really, really wondering where you're coming from with that when there's testimony here. And I don't think it would be refuted that it was dealt with immediately. Now, what went on between there and December is what you're having problems with, trying to eliminate the problem or deal with the problem internally. Is that what you're having a problem with?
No,
Senator Sharon.
Thank you very much. What I'm having a problem with is that there's a significant period of time between the time that Mr. Sheehan addressed the issue and then brought it to Mr. Sheehan addressed the issue with the parties involved, not the deputy the deputy majority leader. And then later in the complaint, in an interview, Senator Michel responded to questions related to his actions. And this is what he said, that Colin Sheehan told you this. He also told you, I believe, that he confronted Senator Cole and the staffer about this, and they admitted it. Am I accurate about that? And Senator Michel says, that's a fair summary, Ron. And I would go on to include that my hope would have been that they would have been, being on notice, that the majority leader would have done the right thing back in October. That's not taking an action. That's hoping that Colin Sheehan would take an action, not that he would take an action.
And Senator Sheehan, you certainly...
Senate Majority Leader.
Sheehan, you wouldn't certainly have hoped that he wouldn't have taken action or she wouldn't have taken action. You're not suggesting that. That's a suggestion by the Majority Leader that is being taken care of.
What? No.
Sheehan.
You're not hearing what I'm saying. And I don't blame you for not wanting to hear what I'm saying. It's right here under number 9.
Cheers,
and I don't even say it. And I didn't even say it. It's the Senate Deputy Majority Leader that said, after hearing this, that he hoped that the parties would resolve the issue.
Didn't speak to swift action. Senator Sheehan. I had Senator
Ingebrigtsen.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, Madam Chair, don't forget. We're getting out of hand, and I don't want it to get personal, so I want you to direct your comments through the chair. Yeah. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, it just became personal. She understands why I don't understand this. She understands it. What does that mean that I don't want to understand this? What does that mean other than the fact that this is purely political, purely? That's exactly what you just told me. I'm very surprised.
Would you say more about how
Senator
that?
Senator Sheehan.
Would you ask him to say what it is that?
Your comments through the chair so that it doesn't get personal. Madam Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, Senator Sheehan. Madam Chair. Thank you.
I think in order to avoid that, what I will simply do is repeat so that Senator Ingebrigtsen can hear what I'm saying, and that is that if he reads number 9 in the complaint, he will see in relationship to the complaint about whether or not there was swift action. He said there was swift action, but was there in fact swift action, or is that another deceptive statement that it's clear under number 9 that it was Mr. Sheehan's comments to Senator Koch and to the inappropriate relationship that were reported to him, but he didn't take an action. He didn't report an action. He reported, I just hope they would resolve the situation. That's not taking an action. That's not swift action.
Senator Ingebrigtsen. Or was that?
Chair,
I couldn't
yes.
tell if that sigh was.
Can I help you?
Okay, maybe the sigh wasn't what I thought it was.
Madam Chair,
Senator
I apologize, Senator, for losing my cool here, but I was being told very clearly that I wasn't understanding what was going on. We have an interpretation here that you think swift action should have been a little swifter, I guess, than I think, and Senator Jeff Michel thinks, and quite frankly, what Senator Pappas might think if she was in that same position. So I just, you know, to judge whether this was being handled properly or not, again, I keep going back to what a tough job that had to be, and having the chief of staff deal with it within a day's time, to me, is very swift, actually very swift, and as Senator Harrington knows, and I don't want to drag you into this, John.
But well,
when these types of things come up and administration's got to handle these things, they don't just happen overnight. You deal with things as swiftly as you can. And I'm not going to second guess the minority leader, the deputy minority leader on his process. It's just nobody wrong here.
And Senator Sheehan, I do believe you have a
motion
on the table to find probable cause and continue with an investigation. All in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed, no.
No.
No. Motion dies on a tie. I think the chair would like to suggest, and if it is a if it is agreeable to the parties, we are about a half an hour late for session. I realize session may go late. Do we want to attempt to come back later, or do we want to entertain a motion that would delay the proceedings until any kind of legal issues, until potential litigation or pending litigation was resolved?
I would just for, can we just sort of discuss
Senator
that?
Sharon.
I would certainly be open to a motion that would delay, or find the language.
It would delay until
vote to defer action, but not until after litigation. It can be later tonight if people want to do that, or it can be sometime next week, but certainly no later than next week. If we can come to that agreement, I can support
Senator Sharon. What would change between now and next week?
That would be
we
point.
just had a no probable cause, they both died. What would change by next week, I guess, is because I
think that's a good question.
Then we
need to just continue to sit here until we figure out something that we can come to an agreement on, which is the other alternative.
Well, Senator Sharon, I mean, one of the concerns is that there were questions that we were unable to have answered because of the advice of counsel, and the only thing that eliminates that is the pending litigation being resolved. So then we could have.
But I didn't agree with that. I indicated that there's more than one component to this and this complaint, and that
I believe
the issue of misleading the press, rather than a number of other options. Choosing to deal with a problem by deception is unethical, and that's enough for probable cause. So I can't just disregard that and say there isn't probable cause. We have a complainant here who has an accurate complaint that we have an obligation to respond to.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Given that the motion for probable cause has failed, shouldn't this hearing be terminated?
My understanding
that would be Senator Sharon, that would be a question for counsel.
Madam Chair and members, I'd refer you to Rule 55.4, which says that within 30 days after receiving a complaint, the subcommittee must meet and either make a finding of no probable cause, vote to defer action until a certain time, or proceed with its investigation. The rule is written so that a majority of the subcommittee concludes the proceedings.
I would like to say that they are asking us at least to recess for session. So there is a request for that Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, to Senator Sharon's last statement with regards to the media being misled, I think that's a accurate statement here. I don't know that the media is here complaining about any of this. And furthermore, the question I would have of counsel is should, and I'm not suggesting at all, in fact I would not agree with this, that the committee would find that there's probable cause and that the wish of Senator Pappas would be for Senator to apologize on the Senate floor, because I think that's what she's looking for here, if I'm not mistaken. Would Senator Michelle have to do it if this committee said so? And I'm asking, and I want to qualify that too, because it's been repeated several times to the media as well as other groups.
Madam Chair and Senator,
and here today,
Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think if I understand your question correctly, if the subcommittee were to recommend that Senator Michelle apologize to the Senate, would he be required to do that?
That's right.
I think the answer is no. However, the subcommittee would typically in the past has conditioned dismissal of the complaint. In other words, a finding of no probable cause on an apology like that. So although he couldn't be compelled to do it by the subcommittee, they might find a way to, in the past, the subcommittee has found ways to make members decide to do that.
The chair will entertain a motion to recess for session, and then I don't know, I guess then the chair is trying to decide if we should come back after session, potentially this evening. So Senator Sharon will make the motion.
I'll make that motion.
And Senator Sharon makes a motion that the committee recesses until after session this evening. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No. You guys have it, right?
Yes, they do, because I vote aye, too. Because So we are in recess until after session.
Can we leave this here? I'm sorry.
I didn't know what the plan was.